Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Now, first this morning, our country is obsessed with CAO points. That's according to the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Simon Harris, who is in the studio now. Good morning to you, Minister.
Good morning, Claire. Thank you for joining us. Thank you.
So you have some new details today on this plan to give people a way into higher education that's outside of the CAO system, which everyone is so familiar with. How will it work?
Yeah, look, today is it's a massive step forward for breaking down silos in third level education. We have far too many people in this country who go to further education, work really, really hard, know exactly what they want to do, but find themselves unable to complete their degree programme. So what we're doing, and I really want to thank the Higher Education Authority and Sulis, we've all been working over the last while to try and put in place joint programmes where you will now be able to go from September in 13 courses, start your degree in further education and training, so not have to be obsessed or worried about leaving cert points. Get into further education training, do perhaps 2 years there, and then automatically, subject to getting through the exams and the likes, be able to complete your degree in a university. So if you take nursing as an example, every single year we have great students who would probably make great nurses getting into colleges of further education, doing a post-leaving cert course in nursing, getting distinctions, and then heading off to staff the NHS because they're having to complete their nursing degree in the UK because these pathways haven't been in place. So today's just a start, but it's a big start with 13 programmes across the country that'll be rolled out in a whole load of areas, including sustainable engineering, nursing, performing arts, culinary arts, music technology, computing, business, and so on.
Because one of the arguments you have in favour of this system is this serious skills shortage that we have, and you talk about a global war on talent that could leave Ireland behind. And you've just said there about people heading off to the NHS and probably then opting to stay there once they finish their training. How does this change that, though? Because we know that our graduates here, 65% of them, are either thinking about leaving or leaving.
So slightly different issues, if you don't mind me saying so, because the first is making sure that people don't feel they have to leave to complete their education in the first instance. So I've been in Sligo College of Further Education. I've met nursing PLC students who desperately want to complete their nursing degree in Sligo. Under this programme, they'll now be able to. Up until now, many of them have not been able to get in. So if you can keep people in your country longer, if you can ensure people can access all of the education here in their country, if they're getting their placements in Irish hospitals here, I think that makes a very positive difference. And of course, today is not just about nursing. I'm just using that as an example. Mm-hmm. It's about a whole variety of areas. But it's about
it's about mental health and well-being of young people too, who think it's about points. Okay,
and I'm worried about that.
That's an accepted argument. But even those who are able to complete their education, and let's take, for example, nursing, they are still going in droves. This doesn't go to fix that problem.
No, and I'm not suggesting that today is a solution to broader issues around recruitment and retention in the health service. I think there's lots of different strategies and angles that need to be approached in relation to the general retention of talent. But what I definitely do know is that if we have an education system in Ireland that says you can succeed if you do well in rote state exams, but if you don't, we want to extinguish or cap your ambition at a young age rather than try and enthuse it. That's not good for the future of our country. It's not good for the well-being of young people. Also not good for people who are listening to this programme today who aren't just out of school, who are 40, 50 or 60, maybe left the workforce and education to raise kids or to look after an older relative. And now they think it's my time. Now I want to go back. But I'm not able to pack my bags and head to university for 4 years. This will mean in their community, they can actually go to the local college of further education, work hard there, do well there, meet the standards there, and then maybe do a year or two in the university and get the same qualification.
It sounds like you're not happy with the CAO overall. I mean, is this the first step to dismantling it?
So it's not, and the CAO does what the CAO does very well, right? It administers points and places based on points people got. I think that will always be a part of our education system and lots of education systems around the world. What I'm not happy about is that it's seen as the best route or the only route. I'm not happy that sometimes young people in this country are asked, you know, to name the university they want to go to before asking them what they're actually passionate about. This has to be about creating multiple pathways for people to reach their full potential. We're missing out on good people here getting the jobs they want. You could have two people sitting side by side in a school today. One does well in the state exams and goes into university. The other could be just as good an engineer, but wasn't good at Pegsayers. And we have to find ways to make sure they can reach their full potential.
This global war on talent we're losing this in a big way across the board. And we see the CSO figures this morning, which tell us that, and this is quoted in the Daily Mail, 57% of 18 to 29-year-olds said they'd consider emigrating to lower their cost of living. A third of that age group say they're worried that they won't be able to afford to start a family in Ireland. You can understand why they would want to leave.
Well, look, I think at the moment people are obviously living in both a country and a world where cost of living is a real and genuine concern for everybody. And I think that's creating huge anxiety right across the age groups. But I also think that the policies that we're putting in place are really going to help retain people here in this country, trying to make sure that there's an education system where we reduce the cost. We had the first reduction in fees for colleges this year in 27 years. Obviously, housing is a massive part of this. You and my colleague, the Minister for Housing, here yesterday, I think, we've seen more houses built this year than in quite a while. We've seen more first-time buyers buy their first home in Ireland this year than we have in the last 15 years, but we've a lot more that we need to do. But yes, I mean, the future of this country is absolutely going to be about talent. It's going to be about making sure we keep our talent in Ireland, but it's also going to be about making sure that everybody, no matter what age they are, can upskill, reskill and access education. And that when we're talking about education, we don't just talk about it as though it's something for young people, but that it's something people will be able to access at all ages of their life.
You must be frustrated putting these changes in place, and your aim will be to churn out a really well-educated, sought-after workforce. Two-thirds of them are thinking about leaving.
And I also know that the CSO figures, the last ones I saw, which are probably for last year, did see more Irish people return to Ireland than leave Ireland. So whilst people, when they're asked a question in a survey, may give one answer, it is a statement of fact that last year we saw more Irish people return to Ireland than Irish people leave Ireland. But I do think there's no getting away from the fact that there's an awful lot of work that we need to do to make sure that the social contract is restored, particularly with the next generation. The right to be able to buy your own home, the right to be able to have a work-life balance, to access affordable childcare in this country, I think is a real issue. We've seen moves taken by Roderick O'Gorman in the budget that will kick in January. And also making sure that work pays, that we put money back in people's pockets too, to help people through difficult times. So there's not one answer to addressing all of these issues.
But if the social contract needs to be restored, are you saying it's broken?
It clearly is broken, and my party leader, the Taoiseach, has said that too. I mean, and I think it's fundamentally around making sure that every young person in this country and every person in this country who wishes to aspire to buy a home can do it. And that's what government is working relentlessly on. So it's when you look at all the work government needs to do across government, so to build more homes, you need to train more people to work in construction. Mm-hmm. Part of the courses that I'm talking about today will involve engineering. So it's coming at all of these social issues from a whole variety of angles.
If you were entering the workforce now, would you think about emigrating right now, looking at the way the social contract, as you say, is at the moment?
No, I wouldn't. And from talking to people of my own age, to talking to people a little bit younger than me, talking to friends, I mean, I think this is a great country. I think this country has an awful lot going for it. And I think an awful lot of people do think that. Of course, this country has its challenges. So do many countries. But I also think that this is a really good country. It's a good country in which to live. It's a good country in which to raise a family. And it's a good country in terms of having access to both educational and job opportunities.
Yeah, look, but you're saying to the 57% of young people who we know are thinking about leaving, you're saying, I don't understand why you would make that choice.
No, I certainly in no way said that. I said I fully understand that when people are asked a question in a survey, that the frustrations that people can feel can come to the fore. But I'm also saying that when you actually look at the facts as opposed to the answers in a survey, more people returned to this country than left last year. So that is factually true.
So do you agree with Leo Varadkar then that the grass isn't always greener when you go overseas?
I think every country has its challenges. And I think those challenges, some are uniform. So, I mean, inflation, the cost of living crisis is something being felt right across certainly Europe. And then some are particularly acute. And the housing issue is a particularly acute challenge here in this country that we must and are working relentlessly on. And I think Dara O'Brien gave a real overview of the efforts government are taking on housing yesterday in this studio.
And sometimes, though, and we heard this in the feedback to Leo Varadkar, the grass is much greener, especially when it comes to accessing housing.
Well, I think, like I say, there's there's different scenarios that are present in different countries. In some countries, of course, it's easier to access housing than in Ireland, and in others it isn't. But the reality is we're trying to build a future in this country where we can get back to proper home ownership levels, where we see construction rising again, more people buying their first home this year than any time in the last 15 years. Like, that's significant.
They're nowhere near enough. And the targets that we're talking about, like, the government comes in here all the time and tells me that we're going to exceed the targets. The targets are wrong. The targets aren't set properly. So, you know.
Well, the targets aren't wrong, right? The targets will need to be adjusted to meet the census. And the Minister for Housing made that very clear yesterday.
But
and that will
no
happen in March and April.
There's no point in boasting about building close to 30,000 houses when what you need is 40,000 houses.
Well, if I was sitting in this studio and we hadn't hit our targets, you'd be telling me we hadn't hit the targets. We've exceeded the targets that we published this year. We will have built more homes in this country this year than were planned under Housing for All. Is it enough? No. Nobody in government is suggesting it is. We genuinely aren't. And that's why, even as recently as last week, we came forward in my department with plans around student accommodation, because this isn't the job of any one minister or any one department. Every single part of government and society needs to be saying, what more can I do? So what we're going to do is start directly funding the building of student accommodation for the first time in the history of the state. Mm-hmm. And we got the go ahead for 700 student accommodation beds last week. I give that just as an example of the need to constantly be saying, what more can we do and how can we come at this in new ways?
How long is that going to take?
The 700 beds, they'll go to construction in 2023. So I'd expect many of them to come on stream in 2024.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you've been so long in government and you're sitting here this morning talking about a broken social contract.
Yeah, the so long in government is an issue that makes me bristle a little bit, because the so long in government suggests that an awful lot hasn't happened during the lifetime of Fine Gael in government. And of course it has. So even if you were to make the point that we're so long in government and, you know, housing is a major challenge, it is. But the housing challenge has changed over the years. When Fine Gael came to government in 2011, I remember this, I remember sitting in my constituency office in Bray, and the number one issue I was dealing with was fear of home repossessions from people who couldn't pay their mortgage. Ghost estates were probably covered on this programme time and time again. Housing estates that had been built and were empty. Mm-hmm. Nobody to build houses because people had emigrated and the construction sector had completely collapsed. We now have had to entirely rebuild the sector. We have people back working in construction. We have people lending again. We have house building up again. We've had to deal with COVID lockdowns during that time. And we are beginning to make progress in terms of housing construction.
And when you sit in your constituency office in Bray now, it's still housing, isn't it? It's all of the people who can't find somewhere to rent. And we saw that rents have gone up by 82% in Ireland since 2010.
Yeah, when I sit in the office now, it's housing supply. It's supply, supply, supply. There's a lot of new housing coming on stream in my constituency, particularly in the north of the constituency. People can see cranes around. They can see homes being constructed. And I can see social houses now being allocated. I can see more social homes being allocated in my constituency of Wicklow this year than at any time in my lifetime as a politician, in my political career. So, but there isn't any one metric. But, mm-hmm. but let me be very clear. We need to do more. We need to constantly redouble our efforts. And that's a view shared by all three parties in government.
You mentioned Wicklow there, your own constituency, and these protests that we've seen, the community meetings and protests about accommodation, both for people coming here from Ukraine and also people seeking international protection orders. Do you think that the government, given your direct experience of this in your own constituency, have dropped the ball in terms of communication and consultation?
I don't, because we're doing this in real time and we're doing this in a war scenario. And I have seen a department led by Roderick O'Gorman just be incredible in the efforts that they've taken. But we've gone from a scenario where, and this is from my memory, but around 3,000 to 10,000 people a year might come into Ireland seeking international protection or refuge, to a situation where well over 70,000, 80,000 this year.
And we know what the problem is, but you also have seen the other side of it, where people are upset.
You asked me a direct question, do I think we've dropped the ball? And I'm responding and saying, in the context of the war and a warlike effort, I don't. Do I think we need to do more and do better in terms of information? I do. And making sure that there's factual information out there for one reason and one reason only, so that a void or a vacuum can't be filled by people, sometimes with political far-right agendas. And we've seen that. I have seen incredible efforts in my constituency by communities welcoming people. I'm so proud of the efforts that we've made in County Wicklow and across the country in relation to Ukraine. I've met organisations that are working to welcome new people to County Wicklow. And of course, if there was a new apartment block going up in your community, people would want to know, give me the details, let me know about it, how many houses are going there. That information is important, but that's different to anybody having a veto or a right to veto who lives in their community. And there's a very thin line between the two.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading an interview with a councillor in Kill who was saying that the vacuum left by the government is being filled by these groups with misinformation about who's moving into these accommodation blocks that are being renovated for people from Ukraine, for example. That is a failing of government if that's happening.
Well, it's definitely a need for us to do more, and we're very conscious of that in terms of making sure that information is put out there. Like I know in Wicklow, one of the concerns was that actually there were many families who had been located in Wicklow town through the International Protection Programme who had their kids in local schools and the likes and were actually settling in well and become a part of the town, and actually quite a number of people in the town very upset to see them being moved on then to a different location. But of course all of this has to come back to the simple fact that there's a war on Europe, and the numbers of people seeking refuge and protection in our country and across Europe are at record levels, and we need to respond to that compassionately, and we need to not fall for the Putin tactics of dividing on this.
Okay, we have a cold spell coming in the next few days, most likely tomorrow according to Metair. Now Age Action have explained how older people have minimised their lives already. They're reducing heating because of worries over the cost. The new over 70s fuel scheme, which Heather Humphreys announced, that's not going to start until January. What do those people do? What's the message to them over the coming weeks?
So the first message to everybody in relation to this cold snap, and it's been the position of the government throughout the winter, is for people to put on the heat in their home, to make sure that they do keep warm, to know that government will help with the bills as they arrive. And we've seen practical examples of that already. So the first €200 energy credit has taken place in most people's bills. There's another one due in January, which will obviously see people getting €200 off a bill for electricity that'll occur now and over Christmas. Mm-hmm. And there's another €200 due in March. In addition to that, the fuel allowance will kick in, is already in place, I should say, for many, many people. More people will come on stream in January.
Yeah, the expansion of it. And I'm asking about that specific group who are not going to get access to that until January. They're in a difficult, tricky spot now coming into this week.
They are, but they will benefit, of course, from the general energy credit that everybody benefits from in this country. So they will see €200 off their electricity bill, off their heating bill in January. That's already in place. In addition to that, we do know there are supports for anybody who can't heat their home through the social welfare system, through the community welfare officer network. And the message from government, particularly this week, is to please keep warm, do put on the heat, and government will help. And government's made it very clear through the Rainy Day Fund and the funds that we've set aside, if there's a need to do more next year, we'll remain open to that.
Now, the reshuffle is coming up very soon. 11 days until Leo Varadkar takes over as Taoiseach. Your name has been mentioned a lot in speculation around that. You're in a new department. It's not considered one of the more senior roles. Do you feel yourself you're due a promotion?
God, I don't know whether you get as bored asking the questions about the reshuffle as I do answering them, but it is the time of the year, and it's a very valid question. Look, I'm enjoying the job that I'm doing. I love a challenge. I've tried to rise to challenges, whether that was when the COVID pandemic hit Ireland, whether it was leading the referendum on the 8th, whether it's now trying to reform the third level system. So I'm happy to serve in any role where my leader believes I can make a difference. There's lots of challenges across the country, and I'm very eager to play my role, whatever role that might be. But it's above my pay grade, and it's kind of a.
So what happens? Do you find out when you on the day, or are there conversations happening now? Or?
People don't believe me on this because I meet people across the country, including as recently as yesterday in Tipperary, and people kind of come up to you and they say, "Asher, what's happening to you on the 17th?" And I say to them, "Asher, I don't know." And they say, "Oh, you're not saying, are you not?" And I'm like, "No, I genuinely don't know." Mm-hmm. I mean, the way these reshuffles generally work, and the way the appointment of cabinet generally works, in my experience, is you find out on the day. Of course, this time there's a three-party coalition. There will need to be talks between the three leaders. Again, I'm not going to add to that speculation, but obviously the current Taoiseach gets first pick of his department. And from that, there could be ripple or domino effects. So we'll see where the next few days
What would you like to do? What job would you like?
I love the job I'm doing. I loved the job I did before.
And would you like to go back to that job in health?
I think that's unlikely to arise.
But would you like to go back though? Because it's a difficult department. It's a big challenge.
It's a big department. I did 4.5 years there. Did my very best there. Worked with great people. I don't comment or speculate publicly on this. I don't think it's about personalities. I'd say the people listening to this programme must be going mad listening to all this talk about politicians saying
they
what
love
job
it.
They'd like. I'd say
they
love it. They're
love,
texting me and
love,
saying, please
love
talk
the
about
gossip.
It more.
But it's just interesting
it's
that you're
delivery.
Not saying,
it's
I've done
delivery.
Health, I never want to go back there again. You're not saying that to me.
Oh, I've been the Minister for Health. Yeah. I don't expect to be the Minister for Health in December. The Minister for Health is doing a very good job in very difficult circumstances. What I'm saying is, when you're a public servant, which is what I am, you serve in whatever role the incoming Taoiseach believes you're best suited to.
We'll leave it there. Mr. Simon Harris, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.